Ghosts, UFOs, cryptids, life after death. You'll hear great thinkers on these subjects and more on the Paranormal Podcast, the longest running podcast of its type. I'm Jim Harold, and I invite you to join me as we explore the mysteries of life. I bet you love these topics just as much as I do, but don't worry, I won't tell anyone. Join me for some great paranormal conversation. Listen on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Podcast listeners, get ready to question everything. Crime Junkie's Ashley Flowers has joined Parcast for a new show that analyzes the unexplained. It's called Supernatural with Ashley Flowers, and it searches for the truth behind some of history's most peculiar events. Congrats on the new show, Ashley. Every Wednesday, join Ashley as she digs into a different mysterious crime, where the most fitting theory isn't always the most conventional. She'll explore some of the world's most bizarre, paranormal, and mystifying occurrences and dissect the facts with a heavy helping of skepticism and rationale. Enjoy this exclusive clip from the first episode on the mysterious Lead Masks case. Were these men abducted by aliens, or were they victims of foul play? If you want to listen to the full episode, follow Supernatural with Ashley Flowers free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
When a murder goes unsolved, it's frustrating. There's no justice and no closure for the victim's family and loved ones. And there's always the slight chance that the killer might strike again. But let's be real, no matter how much empathy you feel for the victim, often you hear these cases, you hear these stories, and just go on about your day without it truly affecting your life. Rarely is a case so bizarre, so unexplainable, that it throws your own reality into question. Take this one, for example. On August 20th, 1966, 18-year-old Jorge de Costa Alves was flying a kite with his friends on a hill near Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. It was a sunny afternoon, and he was enjoying the fresh air outside of the city. And then he saw something up the hill. Two dead bodies lying in the grass. Both were dressed in formal suits and identical raincoats. They were laying peacefully with their hands behind their heads, almost like they'd laid down for a nap and just never woke up. And on the ground next to them were two masks, about the size and shape of sunglasses, but made out of solid lead. The whole scene was so surreal, it sent Georgie running down the hill in terror. But things would only get weirder from there. By the end of the week, police weren't even sure if the killer they were looking for was human. This is Supernatural, a Parcast original, and I'm your host, Ashley Flowers. Some of you might know me from my show, Crime Junkie. In this show, I'm teaming up with Parcast to dive even deeper into the unexplained. Paranormal events are fascinating to me because they force you to reconsider everything you thought you knew. A lot of the time, maybe even most of the time, supernatural claims can be debunked. But sometimes, even skeptics have to admit that the facts of a case don't add up to a solution. To get to the truth, you have to look beyond what we know is real and consider what else could be, even if it sounds irrational or hard to believe. On this show, we're going to take some of the strangest occurrences from around the world, put them under a microscope, and try to figure out what really happened. This week, we're starting with a pair of unexplained deaths in Brazil, known as the Lead Masks case. You can find all episodes of Supernatural and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. And if you like what you're hearing, reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and on Twitter at Parcast Network. By the time police got the call about the bodies on Vintame Hill, it was already starting to get dark. The hill is surrounded by thick forest and brush, so for everyone's safety, they decided to hold off until morning. Of course, the press didn't take the same precautions. When officers finally did arrive on the morning of August 21st, 1966, Vintame Hill was already swarming with reporters. They even snapped a few photos before the bodies were carried away. Unfortunately, all of the original sources are in Portuguese, and more than 50 years later, it's hard to track them all down. But some of them were summarized in English in the Flying Saucer Review, which, despite the name, was a fairly credible journal in the 60s. Based on those articles, here's what we know about the police investigation. The only easy part of this case was identifying the victims. 32-year-old Manuel Pereira de Cruz and 34-year-old Miguel José Viana. Both men were electronics technicians from the town called Campos dos Goytacazes, which is about 175 miles northeast of Rio de Janeiro. Both of them were happily married, well-respected in the community, and led pretty normal, unassuming lives. According to their families, Miguel and Manuel had left town on the morning of Wednesday, August 17, 1966, 3 days before their bodies were found. They said they were heading to Sao Paulo to buy some electronics equipment, along with a used car they'd been looking at. They took some money with them, somewhere between 2 and 3 million cruzeiros. The conversion rate is a little hard to calculate, but that's somewhere worth like a few thousand US dollars today. At about 9 a.m., Miguel and Manuel headed out to the bus station accompanied by a friend named Elcio Gomez. Elcio wanted to go into the bus station and see them off, but the other two men insisted that he just drop them off outside. Elcio didn't understand what the big deal was, but he didn't think too much of it. He watched Miguel and Manuel walk into the bus depot, and then he went back home. That was the last time he ever saw his two friends alive. Now, even with the minimal evidence police had at this point, there were a few things about this story that didn't add up. When the bodies were found, they only had a combined 161,000 cruzeiro on them. The rest of the 2 to 3 million is unaccounted for still to this day. And of course, they didn't go to Sao Paulo like they told everyone else. They went to a town called Niterói, which is a suburb of Rio de Janeiro, which is a good couple hundred miles away. The investigators went back to Niterói hoping to find some answers there. But once they pieced together the rest of August 17, 1966, all they had were more questions. Miguel and Manuel's bus would have arrived in Niterói at around 2 or 2:30 that afternoon. Their first stop was an electronics store. They'd been to that store before, so we can assume it carried some kind of equipment that wasn't sold in their own town. But for some reason, they left the store without buying anything, and they didn't even talk to the sales clerk there. Now, maybe the store was out of whatever they were looking for, but they'd taken a 5-hour bus ride to get there. Why on earth wouldn't they at least check with the clerk before leaving? Either way, after they leave the electronics store, it starts to rain. So they stop into a clothing store nearby and buy a pair of matching raincoats. Again, this doesn't raise any red flags on its own, but what is weird, the clerk said that they left in such a rush that they didn't even bother to put on the coats before running out into the rain, the coats that they just bought. Now, you might assume that the big appointment that they were rushing to was with the owner of that used car that they were looking to buy, but you'd be wrong. They didn't buy any car during the trip. So if they weren't buying electronics and they weren't buying a car, what were they doing there? Oddly, the next time they surface is at a bar in the same neighborhood as the clothing store. And when they get to the bar, they're still like very anxious about the time. Miguel goes to the counter and orders a bottle of mineral water. According to the bartender, he's acting just very like nervous and impatient. And while he's ordering, he keeps like glancing over at the clock. After paying for the water, Miguel keeps the receipt. And this might not seem like a big clue, but Brazil has a recycling policy where you could return empty bottles for a deposit. So whatever or whoever they're waiting for, Miguel assumes it won't take too long, and he'll have time to return the bottle before heading home that evening. No one saw Miguel and Manuel leave the bar, so we don't know if they met someone there or they left alone. But at 5 p.m., they're seen at the foot of Vintame Hill, which is just outside town. They pull up in a Jeep driven by someone with blonde hair. There were two other men in the car as well, but the witness couldn't see them clearly. Whoever these three men were, they were the last people to see Miguel and Manuel alive. So by this point, police had mapped out all of their movements from leaving home in the morning to arriving at the hill that night. But none of it offered any clues about what actually happened next. We already mentioned a few of the strange details at the scene of the deaths, but if we take a closer look, it's even more baffling. Let's start off with what they didn't have, the money that they brought with them. The most obvious possibility is that this was a robbery gone wrong. But staging a scene like this would have taken a lot of time and effort for not a ton of money, and they also left some behind. Also, there were no injuries on either of the bodies. No cuts, no bruises, no burns, no sign of violence at all. When the coroner did an autopsy, there were no internal damages either. And strangely, despite sitting out in the open for 3 days on a hill that's swarming with wildlife, the bodies were totally untouched by animals. No one can really say what that means, but it kind of seems like there was something unnatural about the deaths, if even the vultures didn't want to touch them. If this wasn't a murder, the next possibility was suicide. But this theory sort of falls apart too, because Miguel still had the empty water bottle and the receipt. If he knew he was going to die, why go through the trouble of saving that receipt? Beyond that, police find 3 pages of handwritten notes that definitely didn't suggest a suicide pact. The first page has a list of electronics parts numbers, along with some algebra work. The equation uses Ohm's law, which is E equals IR, which is used to calculate the strength of an electrical current. Now, the two men were electronics technicians after all, so everyone assumes these are just notes for a work project. Now, the next page, though, is more of an enigma. Translated from Portuguese, it says, quote, Sunday, one tablet after the meal. Monday, one tablet in the morning on an empty stomach. Tuesday, one tablet after the meal. Wednesday, one tablet before bedtime, end quote. Obviously, this is talking about some kind of prescription, but as far as anyone knows, neither Miguel or Manuel were sick. Now, the last dose, that Wednesday before bedtime dose, would have been taken right before they died. But due to decomposition, the coroner couldn't get anything useful out of the toxicology report. So we still don't know what was in those mysterious tablets. And this was a little hard for me to understand because just a second ago, I know we said the bodies were kind of untouched by wildlife. I expected them to be in good condition, but whatever was going on at the time, they just either didn't have the technology, they didn't have the time, and they weren't able to test for it. So finally, the third page has another set of instructions. This one said, quote, 16:30, be at the determined location. 18:30, swallow capsules after the effect, protect metals, wait for mask signal, end quote. Now, the confusion isn't a translation issue. It doesn't make any sense in Portuguese either. It almost seems like the note was kind of scribbled down quickly in some kind of shorthand, which probably means someone gave the instructions verbally and someone else wrote them down. Putting it all together, we can at least gather that Miguel and Manuel weren't the victims of some kind of random attack. They came to the hill for a reason. And that brings us to our last piece of evidence, the lead masks themselves. Now, you're probably picturing a full mask that like covers your entire face, almost like what welders wear. But these were about the size and shape of sunglasses made out of solid lead. They were apparently homemade and cut roughly from scrap metal. Lead blocks radiation, so it's often used as a coating for protective goggles and face shields. But these masks were too small to offer any real protection. And since they were solid metal, it would be impossible to see or do anything while wearing them. So at first, police had no idea what to make of these masks. But after some digging, it turned out that this wasn't an isolated incident. According to Flying Saucer Review, there was another case 4 years earlier where another electronics technician had been found dead on a hill with a lead mask. In that previous case, the police determined that the man went up to the hill and took some kind of drugs because he was convinced it would allow him to pick up radio and TV signals with his mind. Now, one delusional technician we can accept, but three is a different story. There was something bigger going on here. and no one knew how many lives would be taken before this was over.
To finish this episode, listen to Supernatural with Ashley Flowers, free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.